Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ anuttaraṃ upacayaṃ namassāmi. December 31st, 2020, and it's not over yet. I remember doing the sit here, as we normally do in every New Year's, doing the sit New Year's Eve 2012, and there was all sorts of talk that the Mayan calendar, the world was going to end on 2012, and I remember sitting and thinking, oh yes, the world didn't end. And it was about 11:30 p.m., December 31st, 2012. And I was just thinking like, oh, we're going to make it. We're going to make it through 2012. And then there was a trembling, like in the earth, like an earthquake. Oh, maybe not. Not sure. We live in an earthquake zone. So there's a lot of small earthquakes here. So the area decided to have an earthquake at 11:30 p.m. 2012, but then it passed and we made it. We made it through the year. So special time for us. We go toward winter retreat. We go toward winter retreat, and we're going to start with some open time. So for those watching the live stream, we'll still have Saturday night and the lunar observance night in the first week or so of the winter retreat, but otherwise it's going to be open period. It's going to be forest practice for the community, so it's just taking a break. So taking a bit of a break from the live stream for the first part, and then it'll start up again on January 8th. So we need breaks too. And starting with the full community schedule, full group schedule, full group practice starting on January 8th, doing that for about 5 days, and then it'll shift again. So as the highest blessings was coming up, wanted to do that chant earlier for the evening puja. So just thinking about coming to an end of a year and thinking about blessings and how do we cultivate blessings, and that particular sutta, the Mangala Sutta, it's found in the Sutta Nipata. And for anybody who hasn't read the commentary on that, Bhikkhu Bodhi has this new Sutta Nipata that came out, and it includes the commentaries to all of these, and that's some of the most amazing commentaries, the stories between the stories about the Karaniya Metta Sutta and the Ratana Sutta and the Mangala Sutta. And these are some of the most interesting, in my opinion, commentaries to the suttas, the Sutta Nipata commentary. And this is where a lot of the stories that the Kruba Ajahns in Thailand tell, because this is something that is well known in Thailand, a lot of these stories. But in the West, we're quite new to them. So, for example, we chant the Ratana Sutta for like epidemics or pandemics because of the whole story about the Buddha having Ananda chanted in Vaisali because there was a plague that broke out there. And the Mangala Sutta is the commentary to that. It's really the only place that I know of that we find the Buddha's daily schedule, the Buddha's daily self schedule that's laid out. It's quite interesting. So the Mangala Sutta is like this progression starting from, well, it's a deva coming to the Buddha. And the whole reason the commentary lays out the Buddha's daily schedule is it's talking about the beginning of the sutta. In the old commentarial tradition, they go line by line through the suttas and they define the terms in the sutta, but they also go through and tell like backstory, like why it was given in a certain way. It tells about the place and tells about the time, and then in the dark of the night, a radiant deva illuminated all Jetta's Grove. And so like the Buddha's in Jetta's Grove and Atapindika's Park, and the night has well advanced. And so that's when it talks about the Buddha's daily schedule, how there's one part of the Buddha's daily schedule where he would receive devas, and that's like he would rest from midnight till 2 a.m, and then he would walk up and down and see if any devas were going to visit. And so this in this part of the night when devas are around, then he would receive them and have discourse with them. And so this is a deva which was curious about blessings, saying, you know, just like humans, devas are also, and according to Buddhist lore, then the devas, many devas actually look like humans, but they're composed of light. They're, deva means luminous, and it's like a being of light. And so this deva came down and said, just like humans, devas long for peace and happiness always, and we always want more refined peace and happiness. We always want blessings. So what are the highest blessings? How do we cultivate the highest blessings? And so the first piece of advice the Buddha gives is avoiding those of foolish ways, associating with the wise, honoring those worthy of honor. These are the highest blessings. So he begins with that, like associating with wise people. And so if we're interested in Dhamma, then we're associating with like-minded people and people who are going to help us along the path. Sometimes there's this idea like, oh, you know, people stay in the monastery and they're not really helping the world. And, you know, you have the Dhamma and the Dhamma is so amazing. Why don't you go out and, you know, spread the good word and kind of go out into the world and be a good example. And one of the dangers in that is, yes, we could go out in the world and not live in monasteries and be a good example, but then would we influence others or would they influence us? So it's like, it's a nice idea to go out and be a good example for others, but it's highly unlikely they'll be receptive to it, or else they would be drawn to the monastery. The people who are receptive to it are drawn to the monasteries or drawn to the Dhamma of their own volition. So the reason we stay in monasteries, the reason we come here to practice, is if we were to go out and live in the world, it's unlikely that we would be a good influence, and it's more likely that the world would then influence us and there would be a degeneration. And so we stay in the monastery, we put our heads down, cultivate the path, and then our service to society is that those who want it, those who really want it, they need to work, they need to show up. It's a bit easier these days. You turn on the live stream. But even that takes motivation, a motivation to watch, a motivation to listen, a motivation to contemplate. Without that motivation, talk's kind of boring, I'll just turn it off. So, and in the old days, of course, in the time of Ajahn Mun, then it took much more determination. You had to search for him. Forest monks in Thailand, had to be incredibly determined to seek out Ajahn Mun. And then it was like they had to search for a long time. Sometimes you'd get a pair of Tudong monks searching for Ajahn Mun so they could get some teachings. And they would hear a rumor. They'd have to go by rumors of where he was or like where he had been. They'd have to track him down. And then they would get to a village and it'd be like, oh, you just missed him. He was just here last week on alms round. But he didn't say where he was going. They'd have to keep tracking him down. And then if they had enough determination and enough motivation and enough skill and intelligence to track him down, then they could get the teachings from him. And they're not going to forget what he says. They're going to be incredibly receptive to it because of that effort they had to put in just to get the teachings. But now we have this a veritable Dhamma feast before us. So it's like we have the suttas, we have teachings, we have the teachings of the Kruba Ajahns, we have the Dhamma books printed out, so we have a Dhamma feast. So not to let that opportunity slip by and to make use of it. 2021, to make use of it. These are the highest blessings, just that avoiding those of foolish ways, associating with the wise, choosing to associate with the wise, and honoring those worthy of honor, and not being afraid to pay homage to that which has benefited us. I added into the beginning part of the Dhamma talk where we chant the Namo Tassa and the Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami. Taking after Ajahn Jayasaro, he adds in an Anuttarang Upajayang Namassami. So like that's the homage to the Upajaya who ordains us. So that's our link with the monastic life. So for myself and for us here, that's Longpor Pisano, who's ordained us. And even just thinking about that is enough to be worthy of homage, worthy of honor. Just the fact that we got to be ordained by an Upajaya, even if that Upajaya didn't have any other good qualities, just the mere fact that they ordained us is already enough to pay honor, pay homage. All the other good qualities, all those other good qualities, the practice and the ability to teach and lead others on the path, that's all extra. But just the fact that one is an Upajaya and ordains other people and gives people that opportunity, that's enough to, that's already good enough to give honor and look after that monk, that person. So it's like Lumpur Cha always made a point of looking after his Upajaya, even though he was really mean and by all accounts not a great monk. And Longpor Cha never forgot that link, that he was ordained by this person. And then how much more so worthy of homage you have somebody like Longpor Pasano, who has all the good qualities, including being the Upajaya, so how much more so? So it's easy then. So it's like living in places of suitable kinds with the fruits of past good deeds. and guided by the rightful way, these are the highest blessings. So it's like living in places of suitable kinds. So this comes back to like living in a place that's going to help us cultivate the path. Already the defilements are so strong. The greed, hatred, and delusion is so strong in the mind, in the heart, that we need these places to help us. You know, if we decided to not live here, then it's that the world's then going to be an influence on us. That's how strong the defilements are. It's not going to be the other way around. And so, they're subtle too. They're subtle and hard to catch. So we need monasteries, we need communities, we need Kalyanamitta, the Dhamma friends. And with the fruits of past good deeds, it's recognizing that we're here because of some sort of good actions that we've done in the past. There's been a certain momentum building up, and that's what's driven us here. There's that deep, wholesome motivation, the wholesome root. So the next one is like accomplished in learning a craftsman's skills. So that talks about like this progression of the Mangala Sutta. It kind of starts with lay life and goes into monastic life. So it's that's talking about like you have some sort of livelihood, ideally a wholesome livelihood, but it's some sort of livelihood that you've put your heart into. And the Buddha spoke in praise of not just having a job to get money, but having something that you can put your heart into. Or if it's something that you work at, you know, not by choice, maybe something you inherited, but you make the best of the situation. So it's like it's talking about like being skilled, discipline, accomplished in learning a craftsman's skills with discipline, highly trained, and speech that is true and pleasant to hear. These are the highest blessings. So like not only being accomplished in some sort of livelihood, but also truthfulness, that focus on truthfulness, and that can be a big one, I think, in terms of recommending like resolutions, like New Year's resolutions, just truthfulness, and putting in a plug for like a preservation of truth, like not making categorical statements, this is true, everything else is false, but saying, I heard this, I think this, this is my opinion, you know, getting into that mode where that preserves truth, so we don't make categorical statements like this is the way it is. We say like this, I think this is the way it is. That's more of a true statement that preserves truth. So the Buddha talked about this preservation of truth, and that actually it puts a sacred sphere around ultimate truth. It puts a circle around. The real truth that maybe we haven't realized yet. So we say like, I think this, or I've rationalized this, or I've considered this, and I've come to this logical conclusion about this, but we don't say, this is how it is, you know, if we have a strong opinion about something, but we preserve truth in that way. So, because the truth, the real truth, the ultimate truth is very, very sacred, and we don't want to trivialize it. Providing for mother and father's support, cherishing family, ways of work that harm no being. These are the highest blessings. So the Buddha's lifting up family and cherishing family, giving attention to family. So doing what we can to provide for mother and father's support, and this is the Buddha's teachings on looking after or on gratitude to mother and father, gratitude to parents. This is a really important teaching and something that in Asian Buddhist cultures they give a lot of importance to. Filial piety in China was huge. That's a big one that Master Xuanhua would talk about, filial piety, where he, to the extent that when his father passed away, he sat out of filiality for 3 years next to his father's gravesite. That's one extreme. That's extreme filial piety. But the Buddha did talk about it's very difficult to repay the debt of gratitude to your parents, because if you think of how the way we develop this idea of gratitude to parents, because some people, when they hear this teaching right away, they're like, well, my parents were horrible to me, and I'm totally ungrateful. But then if we think about if we're alive, then it's worthy to have gratitude to parents or whoever brought us up, because when we were born, we were totally helpless. And in that state of helplessness, we did get helped somehow. We survived. And so we were loved. We were brought up. If we just think about that time as an infant, then learning how to speak, learning how to do things, learning how to go to the bathroom. We didn't know any of this. What if our parents didn't clean our diapers for us? You know, this is just like something that it's worth bringing up. Now we can, you know, at this point we can look after ourselves, but as infants we just don't have the physical capacity, the mental capacity to look after ourselves, to even speak, to let it be known what we want. You know, we have to learn that. So the Buddha said, it's very difficult to repay that debt of gratitude. And however, if one establishes one's parents who previously didn't have sila, if one establishes them in sila that they previously didn't have, if one establishes one's parents in samadhi that they previously didn't have, or one establishes them in punya, in discernment, wisdom, which they previously didn't have, one repays and more than repays the debt. And so This is important, but that's not to say it's not important to also look after, say, the other non-spiritual needs of the parents as well. And there's been monks, senior monks, who have looked after their parents in their old age and their dying process. And this is also the Buddha. A lot of the allowances in the Vinaya and a lot of the relaxations around minor rules come around parents and being with parents. And so the Buddha just really making that emphasis in his teachings. One of the mundane right views also is there's mundane right view and super mundane right view. Super mundane right view being the view that there is suffering, there is a cause of suffering, there is a cessation to suffering, there is the path. But then mundane right view is there is mother, there is father. That's part of it. There is mother, there is father. It's not that, well, it's all empty. There's no mothers, there's no father. Sometimes, like, contemplating not self, I remember hearing a story, and I won't name who it was, but there was a young firebrand monk all fired up about not self and the Dhamma, he's actually said this in Dhamma talks, so I'm not revealing anything new here, but he told his mother that she's not actually his mother. And so he was trying to teach her the Dhamma, you know, out of compassion. And and she said, well, I had you. I went through that experience. So that was, she said, I pretty sure I'm your mother. I said, no, not self. You're not actually my mother. So he said he realized later, like, oh, wait, that's not in line with the mundane right view taught by the Buddha. So there is this, the way Ajahn Mun would teach it would be like, there's a thread, you have like a psychic thread to your parents, and it's very powerful. I remember when I went to First Tuesday at Berkeley one time, and Dharma Master Hung Shur's mother had just passed away, and he said it affected, and we saw him there, and he said it affected him so much more than he could have imagined. And he the way he described it was like, his mother was his link with the universe, with the cosmos, and like that link was severed at her passing away. That's how he described it. So there is this very strong link. So like generosity and living a righteous life. And these are some more of the highest blessings. The Buddha goes on, steadfast in restraint, shunning evil ways, and avoiding intoxicants that dull the mind. These are the highest blessings. So getting into moving on from, say like, being a righteous layperson, moving on to getting into the sila, and starting to focus on sila, steadfast in restraint, and shunning evil ways. So that's like hariyotapa. So that's the sense of conscience, and starting to sense that there's a need for restraint. And there's a need for actually, say, turning our back on things which might do harm to ourselves or others, avoiding intoxicants. So like the Buddha was down on drinking alcohol, for example. So learning how to restrain ourselves, there might be that desire there, but the desire is not being honest with us, and it's we're not going to get what we think we're going to get from say a lack of restraint. Respectfulness and being of humble ways, contentment, gratitude, hearing the Dhamma frequently taught. So these are the highest blessings. So these are like, respectfulness is a word that I really like. It's garawa. Garawo cha niwato cha santu ti chakatanyuta. So it's like a garawa, niwuta, santu ti, contentment. Katanyu, gratitude. So this sense of respect coming from, they're all linked. Humility, being humble, gratitude. So these are all like really beautiful Dhamma qualities. One is starting to develop, and all of these things is like the Buddha saying, this is the way you generate blessings. You actually create blessings. And then hearing the Dhamma frequently taught. So there's this idea like there's this progression that one is a righteous layperson getting interested in sila and then developing faith and developing immense respect and gratitude. And then there's that hearing the Dhamma. So there's that desire to hear the Dhamma. And then in the next set, it changes to speaking on the Dhamma. So then one has heard the Dhamma, but one is then learned enough that one then speaks on the Dhamma. So then the next set being patience and willingness to accept one's faults, seeing venerated seekers of the truth, and then sharing often the words of Dhamma. So these are like one is then speaking the Dhamma. So the patience, the kanti, and then willingness to accept one's faults, that's a lowering oneself, a willing to have our hidden faults pointed out by our Kalyanamitta, and then seeing the venerated seekers of the truth, that's like the people who have been practicing for a long time and practicing seeking the Dhamma, seeking the truth, sharing often the words of Dhamma. So that's like speaking on the Dhamma, learning how to teach the Dhamma. And there's different views on this. There is a quite purist view about teaching Dhamma, and it comes up in our circles sometimes that one shouldn't teach the Dhamma unless one has fully realized the Dhamma. Longpo Cha himself didn't hold that view. Because he would quote an instance in the suttas where a monk actually realizes Dhamma while he's speaking the Dhamma. And so that idea of speaking on the Dhamma actually clarifies one's own understanding. And then the next set being ardent, committed to the holy life, seeing for oneself the noble truths. So it's like the realization of Nibbana. This kind of makes me think of the life of the Buddha. And that's going to be the theme for this year's winter retreat is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be Buddha Nusati, just because I like to think about the Buddha and talk about the Buddha, and it's in terms of being ordained as Buddhist monks in a Theravada monastery. I think it's good to know about the life of the historical Buddha, but also it's incredibly inspiring. And thinking about how the life of the Buddha was probably lived, this great man who lived in the past, and that the Dhamma comes from. And so this word Nibbana was quite important to the Buddha. And they have a lot of commentarial stories and legends. Like in Thailand, when they talk about the life of the Buddha, it's fleshed out with the commentaries a bit more than our sutta-based life of the Buddha in the West, where we have Venerable Nyanamoli's Life of the Buddha, which is almost completely sutta-based, although it has some commentarial stuff in it. But you get, in Thailand, reading the Buddha Brawat or the Life of the Buddha, Buddha's life story in Thailand, you get these interesting commentarial stories that you don't really find in English. So one that I like is where the young prince, he first hears the word Nibbana by somebody else speaking the word Nibbana. So the young prince he would get into these kind of pensive moods sometimes. And so maybe he's in his early 20s at this point, and he's walking through the streets of Kapilavatthu, and he's in kind of a quiet mood, pensive mood, and everybody loves him. So he's like this really easy to get along with guy. And he's walking through the kind of streets up and down where the palace is, and then one of his relatives, one of his aunts, is singing, looking at him and kind of bursts into song. So she's looking down at him from the second story window, and she's singing that whenever we see Prince Siddhartha, we always feel at ease, and whenever we see Prince Siddhartha, we always feel cooled. and called as nibbanati. It's the verb form of nibbana. And he kind of hears this. He overhears this as he's walking away, and he develops this immensely strong spiritual feeling, like an immense inspiration when he hears the word nibbana. And he's walking away and he's thinking, nibbana, nibbana, nibbana. It's just one of those not very often heard, you know, stories of like the earlier life of the Buddha. And so having kept that in mind, you get the sense he kept that in mind, and that colored his experience, and was as the other things in his life unfolded. And then the last part, it goes although in contact with the world, unshaken the mind remains. And so this is it's describing the mind of an arhant. Although in contact with the world, although in the world, in contacting things, having to eat, having to sleep, having to go through the daily life of an ordinary person, you know, although in contact with the world, the mind is unshakable, beyond all sorrow, spotless, secure. Yeah, these are the highest blessings. And so this progression through to hearing the Dhamma, speaking the Dhamma, realizing the Dhamma, and then living in the Dhamma, being the Dhamma. This is the progression of these blessings. And then the sutta ends with they who live by following this path know victory wherever they go. Every place for them is safe. And these are the highest blessings. And Bhikkhu Bodhi, when he was here one time and he gave a commentary on the Mangala Sutta for us, he made a point of that's slightly mistranslated at the end. It's they are the ones who have the highest blessings. It's not these are the highest blessings. So it's slightly different wording at the end there, that they are the most blessed. So this is like a progression. So for me, what was coming up and just throughout the day today, thinking about like what kind of a reflection is coming up, ending 2020, going into 2021, and just that idea of blessings and generating blessings. And prayer as well. Prayer is a Christian concept, but we certainly pray in terms of making aspirations and making determinations and hoping for the best for ourselves and for everybody in the world. And the world is the physical earth is a very big place. It's made to seem small through technology and through the internet. But it's very big. If you think of just how vast the world is, like the earth is just, so like there's so much more water, there's so much more ocean than land, and like say the land is what, 1/4 or 1/3 or something like that of the planet, and then the rest is ocean. And if you think of one way we can think of how incredibly big that is that if you just take just the land, and with all of our technology and all of our engineering and all of our vehicles, we still can't go certain places. We haven't explored all of the land. Say, for example, like the Tsangpo River Gorge in Asia can't be seen even by satellite, and is incredibly difficult to get into. And so we can't even explore all of the land. And then the oceans are a complete mystery underneath. You know, maybe we can do some sort of depth imaging or something like that with our satellites or whatever, but just that the world, the earth, is just so kind of vast. And then like thinking like, below us, like, you know, sometimes they dig up like dinosaur bones, But just think of like, those are just like little holes here and there. Just think of like how much history is buried below us that we just don't know about. And there's just this sense of, there's just this sense of wonder and amazement at just this planet that we live on. And there's just so many mysteries about it and so many kind of wonderful things and secrets to be discovered and uncovered. And then the people in the world, all people have this latent ability toward kindness. And we think of people like Angulimala, characters in the suttas who were very bad and then turned to be very good. And this is always possible, so we can make prayers and aspirations. May people learn about goodness. May people learn about kindness. And may there be world peace. May people learn about the precepts and the sila. And if may as many people as possible, even if they can't keep the five precepts, may they keep one precept or at least some sort of precept of any religion or any race. You know, may there be peace. May there be kindness in the world. So we can make these kind of aspirations and start to generate these blessings, and then also like remembering what we allow in, what we allow into our heart is going to color what comes out. And so allowing in, like noticing goodness, noticing the positive, and allowing that in, helping to generate those blessings. And so tonight we'll do our sit for anybody who would like to. We'll sit until midnight and bring in the new year, and then go for a rest. We'll bring in the new year with the paritta chanting. So that'll start at about 11:45 for anybody who's interested. And I'll leave it at that for this evening. So for those who would like to keep practicing, we'll keep going, and then the truck can go up after midnight.